It's not that I'd lost passion for cooking. I just wasn't paying as much attention to elevating my game as I had in the past with most things. Perhaps I'd got comfortable. And so when we went over to Asia for the 7 weeks, just at the end of last year, of course, we spent a month in Malaysia. And Doreen was looking around for something to do in a particular town. And she found a cooking school. And we talked about maybe going to a cooking school together and just eyeballing what it's all about. We'd never been to one. And so she found this place. And it was a local lady who'd lived in the area a long time, been a long time cook. And so we basically spent several hours in her house. And right from scratch, she had everything laid out. And so we were cooking with her. She was directing us what to do. And she was explaining the regional, why I raise all of this, is because she was explaining how regionally they add various spices and various things at various times in order to keep building a more and more complex dish to the point where, you know, you've got your starting and you've got your finishing seasonings. And so in between those two states, there's a whole bunch of other things that are going on that I'd kind of let slip. I wasn't really paying attention to learning at a deeper level. And so as I sat through that or stood through that doing the cooking, I thought, man, Sean, you're such a jerk. This is supposed to be your jam. You're supposed to pursue this stuff until the end of days, till you die. And somehow I just kind of lost sight of continuously elevating my game in food. And so that cooking class was a solid reminder from a professional cook that I got to do better. We can all do better, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah, you can. And that's just proof. Sean Taylor just said out loud that he slacked at something. I recorded it too. So
then I
got the proof.
I didn't even realize it until I was in that moment and just thought, God.
Isn't it a slap? Oh, this has happened to me for so much of my life because I've told you this, right? Like my life has been the shotgun approach at everything. Everything interests me. I want to know everything. I want to do everything. And then you get slapped in the face when you do something mediocre, right? Like he probably was bugging you forever, right?
It bugs me to this day.
Yeah,
right now.
Why did I slack off, loser?
Yeah, it's fun, man. It's fun to have a little milestone like that. You know, like obviously if I was so concerned about what people think, then I wouldn't have said it out loud. But I think it's important for all of us to try to remove some filters when we're communicating with people so that they can see that, oh geez, what? He slacked off? Yeah, I did.
Oh, a little vulnerability there, eh? Yeah. A little chink in the armor there, Sean. Right. Slacking off at cooking class. So there's the weakness, guys. There's the kryptonite. Sean in a cooking class.
Right.
He just might get an arrow in his in him there.
Right then.
Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome back to Upon the Horizon. We might as well get that in there.
We've been going 16 minutes. I wasn't even paying attention.
Yeah, okay. Well, we rambled
at the recording.
Yeah,
I don't know what I'll do with that.
Yeah, that'll be like subscribe to our Patreon and listen to the stupidness.
subscribe to the bloopers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the nonsense. But not nonsense. And I talked to you about this. I wanted to talk today because June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. And in keeping with that, I wanted to talk today about men and love. I think that's a pretty deep topic. And I think it's challenging for a lot of men to talk about love. So I figured, why not try that? I think it's a really hard topic to speak on. So I also have or had a surprise, and the surprise hasn't appeared yet, if that's giving it away.
Do you have some little love muffins or little love cookies being delivered to your outdoor kitchen? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, there were supposed to be flowers at your door just before we started for you.
There's
you know,
no way that's true.
No. No, there's supposed to be a guest, but there must be a technical problem going on because I can't even reach the guest right now. So we'll soldier on.
Yeah.
And if the guest appears, then they can jump right in and offer their 2 cents or 3 cents or whatever. So
they're much wiser wisdom.
Yeah. So how do we start off love? Do you want to define love?
I did. Not just now, but Of course, you'd sent me the message that said, hey, do you want to talk about love in respect to what it means to men and et cetera? I thought, yeah, why not? We've never really talked about those kind of things as a group of men, per se. And so, like, it was kind of puzzling to me a little bit how to frame it up. So what I did, and I just finished doing it just before I came into this podcast, and I shot it up to my Instagram stories.
I missed it.
So, oh my goodness. What I did was I just drew out a little diagram, and you won't maybe be able to see that very well out there, anyone who's watching this, but the top word is lubo, and that's a Proto-Germanic word meaning affection or desire. That's where the word love comes from initially, a Proto-Germanic word, lubo, a long time ago. And then that came down to a word called lufu, which is Old English. And associated to lufu is the old High German word, luba, and the old Norse word, lof. So we've got lof, lufu, luba. And then directly below that, the outcome of those words is love, our modern word. So it came from lubo and then worked its way through until we're at love. And so what I did again was I broke it down into affection and desire. And so that's, now you can look at a bunch of different dictionaries. You can talk to all of the large language models, which is what I did this morning. And I'm going to keep it super simple. Love is defined as being part affection, part desire, or simply affection, or simply desire, or any combinations of the above. And so affection, gentle, fondness, warmth, caring, connection, desire, strong wish or craving, wanting, more intense, longing, yearning. So we've got like kind of a soft version of love, and we've got an intense version of love if we're talking affection and desire, if that makes sense. So looking at it from historical perspective and working all the way down to our modern world, if you ask 10 men on a sidewalk, what does love mean? 9 of them won't have an answer, because I didn't have an answer. It's just like this ephemeral word that we just kind of assume means something to us that, yeah, I love my wife, I love my family, and I've got, and then you kind of categorize what that means to you, but it's hard to put into words. And so that's why I went to the words to see if I could tease some details out now. Tag, you're it.
Well, I didn't use ChatGPT today to think on love. But ever since I thought of this idea for today's episode, I've been racking my brain on how to define love and what it would mean for men. Because so many men, like you just said it, you talk about it, and men like get anxiety. It's like they get restless leg syndrome inside their body, and they get uncomfortable because, as a society, we've propped up a cultural norm where you kind of men shy away from this. It seems to emasculate a man to talk about love, but not for me. I'm fond of thinking on love because it's mysterious. So without going to a dictionary or an encyclopedia, just based on instinct, I struggle to put into words what love would mean. Although I can categorize things that love seems to be, and they end up sort of being like a wish list, or the attributes that you see in somebody, right? And I think love is more than that. I think it's deeper than that. You know, you say you love your wife, and then you are asked, what do you love about your wife? What is it about your wife that you love? And you'll list things, you know, the qualities, but that's just, you're just observing her personality. You observe people's personalities every day, but you don't fall in love with them like you do with somebody like your children or your spouse or your family, or maybe your close friends or the guys that are in your tier one group. There's something different about love that way. And so love, I think, has probably an infinite way to be defined subjectively. And I don't know if there is an objective definition of it. It's almost like trying to figure out what consciousness is. Love is, like you said, it's ephemeral, it's ethereal, it's a theory, and it appears real. But to define it myself philosophically, I don't know. I don't know what to say, because all I end up doing is reiterating qualities that I observe in my wife. But within the energy space that I have with my wife, there is something that I could describe as like gravitational. Desire would be one word, like you, that, but it's deeper than, you know, a drink of a good scotch that you're passionate about, or a really fantastic coffee that you can desire or have passion for. There's something more, and it, maybe it is, like I said, maybe it's energy. Maybe love has to do with the energy between people, because the words don't mean anything unless there's something. You could pass by a person on the street, and if you had 5 years to be with them, maybe you'd be in love with them if you got to know them, but you can't know that until you get into it. And so for me, defining love is difficult. And I think for men, when they're trying to define love, they're caught stuck in this stereotype that men aren't supposed to talk about it. And maybe that's partly why I don't have good words to say, because I'm a man and all my life I've experienced love, but I've never spoken about it. And I find it challenging to even now to talk about love openly. It seems to escape me what it is. It's a mystery, but it's real. I don't know how else to say it to you. That's how I feel about love, that it's a real strange mystery. But one that I think is probably the most important mystery of all for humans.
Well, so looking at the two words again, and that is affection and desire, I just treated them as mile markers, two flags in the sand, if you will. Yeah. And somewhere between those two states, love interoperates. And now, so let's pretend for a moment that desire isn't a strong enough word. You want to turn it into a different word that moves the mile marker just a bit further down the road. Okay, now we've got this space that love operates within. And so I think we need kind of like terms, affection and desire, just to indicate the perhaps the level of intensity or the level of love, for lack of a better term, that a person can evaluate how, wait for it, connected am I to this person. Mm-hmm. So the word love, I would easily replace with connection. So for any man out there that is struggling with the word love, what does it mean? It feels ephemeral. I don't know how to use love. You know how to connect. And connection is, I believe, the first step towards love. You've got to connect with someone.
Yeah.
Even on a very, very elementary level, on a very surface level, you need to connect. Now, that doesn't mean that when you first connect to a person, it's the sequence of events that kind of scales up, like, oh, they're okay. Then the next day, yeah, I'm connected a bit more. Yeah, I feel a bit more connected. It doesn't work like that for me anyway. When I connect to a person, it can go from this to bam, that, in a split second, if it feels right, which I'll get to in a sec. So we connect, we establish the connection, what it means to us through feel. And then we somehow, in our own little love language world in our heads as men, that we don't have a language for, we operate between affection and desire. Now, again, you can replace those words with anything you want, but there's this framework that we move back and forth in. And so the initial connection is not linear. It can be exponential. And it can also move up, and the connection can move down, depending on the individual. And so we have this scalable, non-linear sometimes, up and down motion on that initial moment that over a period of time operates within a framework of between affection and desire that ebbs and flows sometimes. And that is the mystery of it. If it was all predictable, if it was all math, if it was all, the first time I met Jay, it was 1 + 1. And then if I add another one, it's 3. And then I add another one, it's 4. That's math. That's not love. It's not connection. And so connections aren't algorithms, and feelings, the feel of it, is not math. And therein lies the jam, the problem, the issue. For guys who just typically, and I'm going to generalize here, guys who just want to, whatever's in front of them, they want to fix it. You got a problem? I want to fix it. There's a problem over there? Where? I'm fixing. And so it's hard to fix love. And it's definitely hard to fix love if you don't even have a framework of what love is. So we dive in to try to fix love, and we don't understand the language, and we shouldn't be trying to fix it. And that's where we get in trouble.
That is very true. And that seems to be one of the big disconnects between men and women, right? Men are problem solvers, right? And women want to evaluate before problem solving. That's
a generality, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a tangent. So anyways, yeah. You're right. And so you've just started to roll out a little bit of language that a man could use and a man could describe what love is. And to further that, we're not just talking about the love between a man and his spouse, mm-hmm. or a man and his children, right? These terms and the things that you're defining, if you're masculine in understanding, they describe your relationship with your close friends too. Mm-hmm. The guys that you call brothers. Mm-hmm. And the embarrassing part of that is that the words themselves bring about the stereotypical nonsense that men shy away from. Mm-hmm. Saying you love a brother, saying you desire another man's friendship or another man's company. To say those words out loud is often met with total embarrassment. And guys won't even say it. It's really difficult to say, I love you, to friends. It's
Dude,
challenging.
I swear. As you were hitting that sentence out, I was thinking like, I don't know who this mystery guest is that's going to show up. But yeah. As you're talking about how difficult it is to say to another man that you love them, I was like, I just said that to Seb the other day, man. I love that guy. Love yeah. you, bro. And so, bam, there he is. What the hell?
Seb Lavoie has joined us. He was just a little bit tardy, and that's okay.
Well yeah. anyway, let's leave it at that.
If you came in at the right time, though. Love you, pal.
Hey.
Here's your time. Love you guys.
Yeah, I love you too, brother. And I bet I've never even hugged you. We're talking about love, Seb. I kind of gave you the hint on that. I don't even think you require an introduction, honestly. I mean, pretty much the whole world minus 10 people know who you are by now, so.
Well, on your those 10 people.
On your platform, they would.
Yeah, exactly. So everybody, thank you. Seb Lavoie has joined us to continue talking about men and love. And we kind of just were making definitions out loud, Seb. To reiterate, I kind of philosophically said I think love is a mystery that is very difficult to define. And Sean has a pretty cool analytical way of looking at love as sort of the things that are in between desire and, what was the other word?
Affection.
And somewhere within that milieu is what love is, and those might be like the outside boundaries of what love is, and depending on the extremity of the desire or the affection, you sort of expand the spectrum of love, right? Mm-hmm. Based on the relationship. And then you showed up and we were like, yeah, another dude's here to talk about love, so let's carry it on. Seb, why don't you I'll put you right on the spot right away. Mm-hmm. When you think of love, how do you define it, or what does it mean to you?
Very, very interesting question. How would I define love? Yeah, it's not very often that I'm completely at a loss, but you know, there's the way that you define love, you know, is an accurate depiction. So is a variety of other depictions. But what I would say is it's probably something that we don't openly engage enough in. I think it's something that generally we don't fully understand or comprehend while it's occurring. I think that we're very good at realizing it was happening once it's gone, whether it be by, you know, fact of broken relationship or having lost somebody that you've never had the chance to or never taken the chance to. I don't like the words never had the chance to, because you had plenty of chances to tell people how you felt about them, yeah. and for them to feel value and important in your life. But definitely it's something that we don't engage enough in. And I think after we lose somebody or someone, we realize all of our failings in maintaining that relationship in the step, or even simply voicing and having that person understanding what they, what kind of meaningful presence they are in our life. And for me, anyways, it took sort of a catalyst, which was, you know, having the person that gave me birth, basically my mom, like just fade away on me in my arms, and for me to be looking in her eyes when the last breath is taken, you know, and now you start questioning, like, was I the son I was supposed to be? Did I say all of the things that I should? Did I spend the time doing the things that I should have done? Have I appreciated it to the extent of which she deserved it? And all of those answers were no, I didn't. I simply didn't. And on that day, November 22nd, 2009, at 13:55, my world changed. And I made a promise to myself, and that promise was nobody will go, nobody that I love, or nobody that I invest in, and nobody that I care for will ever go without knowing. I don't care how weird it sounds. And no amount of weird is making me question my own manhood or my own capabilities or any of that. It's all of that is set to the side. And it's, you know, I believe one of the most critical skills that we have that we often never speak about.
Yeah.
I went all over the place, but you know what I'm trying to say here.
No, you made a really good point, and unfortunately this is so true for too many people, mm-hmm. that you find out what love is once it's taken from you. Right? You take love for granted. You refuse to say the word out loud. You can't kiss your spouse on the lips and say I love you before you leave, or if she shows up in the parking lot at work, you're embarrassed to hug her, and grandma shows up and your buddies are over, you can't say I love you. And then when you can't say I love you anymore to somebody, that's what pardon me, when you talked about mom there, it's only been a year, so
yeah,
when you can't say I love you to someone, that's when you feel what love is. But you're feeling, unfortunately, you're feeling almost like what the echo of love is, because it's gone, you know, the reciprocating person is gone. So nothing else to receive. And that seems to be the grief of love. And then when you find out that way, it can be really eye-opening that you didn't say I love you enough, that you didn't take the time. And then you realize you took love for granted. And see, so you have to learn to define love while you're in the moment of love, and not take, and we talk about gratitude all the time, and I think that's important for love. I'm not sure you can define it with words, and your opening thing made me realize, Seb, that I think that's one of the things, is you define love through experience, not through words.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I once watched a scientific show, scientific program, where they were questioning a whole bunch of things, and some guy jumped on and he's like, do you love your kids? And the guy said, yeah, I do, prove it. And he's like, well, you know, it's just, yes, it can be proved through actions, through things that you're doing, through the amount of investment you're doing, all those things. But really, the reality is it's very, very, it's a very nebulous sort of concept. It's a very mysterious concept, and it's, to a certain extent, it doesn't fully need to be understood. What we do know is, what sort of symptomology does it bring to people's lives? So if you are out, and I think part of the reason why most people don't engage with telling others how they feel, or bringing their friends into the loop, or whatever the case may be, is I think it's that feeling of vulnerability that it brings to some people. To think, like, if I open myself up like this, what happens when that person hurts me? What happens when that person disappoints me? What happens when, you know, that person doesn't reciprocate, or there's a potential that they won't, or maybe they stop, or, and so it's a very sort of selfless process to engage in that, because you're opening yourself up for all of those things, and I wouldn't change anything about that. if there is no risk to anything, what is the advantage? What's the appeal of even engaging in this? Like it's precisely because there is a risk of non-reciprocity, because there is a risk of you being hurt, because that's what makes it so powerful. Mm. And so I never hinge my words or what I'm going to say on account of how a person may reciprocate. And I think even when we look at the concept of grief, I mean, I think that anybody who's lost somebody they love dearly, once we stop the craving of that physical presence, we start truly seeing the reciprocity, but it's in a different way. It's in a different way in the environment that we are. It's the wind, it's the sun. And this sounds like, I don't know, it may sound far-fetched to some, but I can tell you, man, like I've had some real, real rough times where I'd be in the woods somewhere. Actually, you know what? Let me tell you just a little story. So since I turned 40, there has been quite a few incidences where I'm in the woods somewhere, you know, hiking or running or back before my injury and everything. And the sun would peek through the sort of the trees and hit me right in the chest as hard as it possibly can. And I mean, just a super supernatural beam of heat and gratitude and a feeling of overwhelming gratitude that's coming on to me, you know, and it happens every now and again. But most of the time it happens when I'm contemplating mom, when I'm contemplating, you know, the things that I miss about our relationship or the fact that I could just pick up the phone and call and bounce something off or whatever the case may be. And every single time it happens, somehow the sun finds me. It doesn't matter if it's raining, if it's, you know, if there's a snowstorm, it doesn't matter. All of a sudden this giant beam of light comes, strikes me right in the chest. When I was in the hospital on that last in January, there was 2 days where effectively all the pain numbing mechanisms that they employed at post amputation did not take at all. So I was essentially raw dogging an amputation for 48 hours. And one of those days I was in the hurt locker bad, you know, and I was, I don't know how to describe it. I was hurting. And it was absolutely atrocious out. It was, you know, pouring rain, and it was smashing the windows, and everything was just flying around. We almost lost power. There was a variety of different things that happened. I fell asleep in my state, which was, you know, a state of distress and a state of pain. And I woke up all of a sudden, my eyes were squinting because of the sun hitting me right in the chest through that window on a very slight angle, you know, just something. And I looked at the weather report, it's like 92% chance of showers. Yet here's the strongest beam of light hitting me right in the chest, bringing all this gratitude and all these feelings of love and empathy and compassion and all of those things almost like, you know, amalgamated together to make this probably one of the best feelings I've ever felt. And so if you're trying to rationalize everything with your mind, you're going to discount absolutely everything along the way that you are seeing or not seeing. But the reality is, once you start understanding that things do not disappear, they transform. And when that happens, you start seeing the signs, you start seeing the communication attempts, you start seeing, and I don't know how to explain that, you know, and maybe I'm crazy, I don't know, but I can tell you some things. I haven't been sure of anything in my life very often, and I'm sure of one thing. Those are just not coincidences, and it happens all the time. And so when I talk to people that have been grieving for a reasonably short amount of time, it's always about you're making so much noise, and that's normal. You have to go through this, but you're emanating so much noise that you don't pick up on what's being sent back to you. And that's kind of the part that's really important to focus on.
Yeah. Once again, Seth is a speechless. Sean said something that before love, you need connection.
Yeah.
And there's not much deeper connection than the connection between child and mother, right? That maternal bond, hard to break.
Can be. Let's not do too many absolutes here.
Oh yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Overall, the overarching theme is that there is a, but what I was getting at, Sean, is that I think what you're experiencing, Seb, and I don't know, but it's got to be something, is the continuation of this connection, this energetic bond that you experienced with mom. And now, because of your wisdom, your experience in life, your ability to enjoy love and not be ashamed of it and not feel emasculated by it, maybe it's opening those windows so you do feel those energetic connections throughout the universe, right? I mean, things are so weird now with science and what they're learning about entangled particles and quantum mechanics. I don't know, but it's probably real, dude. So yeah, that gave me a little bit of shivers. It's a pretty neat story.
That's real to us, right? And what does it matter anyways? If I said to you, I'm going to give you some placebo pills here, but they'll fix all your problems. Good enough.
Anyway, it'll work because it works like 70% of the time. So there's something really deeply built into love. I wanted to continue this in regards to what does love mean for men in their relationships with their spouse, in relationships with their friends, and as a whole in society. What is it about love that's so difficult for men to grasp, and how do we continue and open the conversation to men? Sean, I wanted to ask you first.
Well, I think that probably the biggest struggle for men in respect to love is the fact that not enough good men have said it's okay to love. It's okay to talk openly about love. It's okay to demonstrate the vulnerability that love can produce at times. It's just that I think for a number of years now, a lot of men have been convinced that to be a man, you have got to be extremely manly, whatever that means nowadays. And typically, the over-manliness of things tends to minimize the vulnerability of love. There's no way you can be vulnerable if you're a man. And so men put on their suit of armor, they head off to work or whatever their day looks like. And as they step out that door, they're fortifying themselves against the world. They're the slings and arrows of the world. And as they get out there, this is their norm. This is their pattern. And so to play off of what Seb was talking about, the patterns that he's observed through beams of sunlight or a feeling of dot, 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 these things are all around us all the time. And you're missing them if you're not looking for them. You need to start looking for love. And then you need to patternize what that looks like to you. You've got to form the pattern so that you can start seeing it more often. And love, as I said, is a large word that can mean a lot of things. Everything from a soft, gentle caring for someone right through to an intense desire, need, yearning for someone. And so between those two states, society as a whole has convinced a lot of men that you shouldn't feel these feelings because it's you being vulnerable. And if a man isn't confident, if he isn't steeled against the world, if he can't walk out the door feeling like, I got this, bring it, world, then they have to partition a portion of their, we'll call it love energy, to bolster their armored state against the world. You give up love to get hard against the world. But if you're hard already, you can throw love around like it's a freaking frisbee, man, because it's of no concern to you. It doesn't minimize your manliness. It doesn't minimize your suit of armor. What it does is it allows you liberty to express yourself fully as a human being.
Well, and doesn't it seem like just a trick of language and syntax? And you mentioned this a few episodes ago, Sean. You said that maybe for some people, love is spelt differently. It's a different word to them, like service or helping, right? And men, we get tricked into thinking that what we're doing out in society and our job or our career, the things we do for our spouse and our children, that these are duties. We call them duties instead of love. But if you just kind of looked at them overall, if you generally defined being willing to put a gun on your hip and go to war You telling me that's not out of love for mankind?
I will tell you that. I'll tell anyone that. People who do that, it's for a variety of different reasons. And some people will do it for that reason. Some people will do it just for the guy next to them who they love. They don't know mankind, but they know the brother next to them. And so they'll do it for that reason. Or they'll do it for their mom who's deceased, and to honor her name. You always talked about it, and now you've decided to do it, and you're going to do it in her name. And so love has many different tangents to it, and it's not just to serve mankind as a whole. It's to serve in all kinds of different ways. And I'm using the term serve. Serve could be another word, and it could be the polar opposite of serve. But love comes in a bunch of different strange ways. It's a 360-degree object, as far as I'm concerned. And so it's not just as, and I know you were keeping it broad and general and to get to the point, but I just want to ensure that for the nuance of it, love comes in many forms and can mean many different things to many people as a motivator.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, and maybe I didn't word it properly. You had said it in a previous podcast that there's just some, you know, some men just don't ever feel comfortable needing some sort of reciprocal relationship that includes love. They're just happy to express service in some way outward without receiving anything back, right?
Right.
And that's, for them subjectively, they just call it service because that's how they feel comfortable. Yet objectively, if you looked at it, I would say it's a form of love. Now, that's just me. I'm only including my opinion on this, right? You might not convince the hardest hardened man in the world that what he's doing is a form of love. And then you can argue whether it is or not. I was just claiming that it seems to be that some men are tricked into believing that what they're doing is simply duty, even though it actually is love. Okay. You go into work and you're breaking your back in the oil field to make money to support your wife and children. That is a form of love. You may not be able to say those words, but I believe it's a form of love. You're conditioned as a man to make it feel like it's something like a duty, because like what you and Seb said, you have to expose your underbelly to say that it's for love. It's out of love. You're sitting around with 50 guys in the canteen on the oil patch, and you're going to start talking about how you're loving your wife and you're so dedicated to her, and you're working, and that's why. You get laughed out of the cafeteria, right?
Right. But what you might talk about, and this is what complicates the conversation. In that camp, you might not be talking about love, but you might be talking about the new F-350 that you're going to buy with all the money that you're making. That's a desire. And so we've got affection and desire. Now someone's desiring a truck more than the affection for their family. So you can see how it's quite a complex situation, just that simple scenario of men sitting around in an oil camp making money and what they're going to do for it. Some might be doing it for the family, to put their kid through school, to do this, to do that. But some might be just for another jet ski. I've got three, I need four. I'm planning on having another kid, I need five. I desire more money. I love my family, but I desire money. And so, like, the words that we're bantering around here and the scenarios that are being painted, they're quite complex. And I know that we're trying to keep things pretty simple, but it's not just as simple as a man goes up to a camp, works to protect his family, serve his family, provide for his family. And by the way, a new F-350 just showed up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree with this. I do believe that implying that everybody is doing certain things on account of the same emotion of this, or the same feeling, or is dangerous. In the sense that love is something that needs to be cherished. It's something that's comes seldom in one's life. Excuse me. And the reason why it's so powerful and the reason why it's so meaningful is because it isn't necessarily the norm as far as it goes, as far as the spectrum of connection goes, right? And I think that it also, to a certain extent, implying that everybody is doing things for the righteous reasons opens us up more even to additional harm, you know, and I think it's important that we understand that there are people that walk the earth spreading love, care, and gratitude everywhere they go. And there are others that are the complete opposite, you know, and both of those will find themselves in different circles and they will intersect in those very circles. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, and I want to think that most people that go and act of service is a language of love, right? Like, so we know that that's a part of the equation, and it can't certainly be. But I think that there isn't a need for generalization in the sense that, not that you meant to generalize, but there isn't a need for us to generalize, because unfortunately a lot of people are not experiencing that, the connection at the level at which I would qualify it as I love this person in my life. I love this person. I love what they bring to my life. My life has changed since I've met them, all of those things that can be in friendship, in relationship, and whatever it is. But I'm very careful with that. The same when I'm having conversations about, you know, why people get in law enforcement, those types of things, because clear and evident, not the case for a lot of people. And when you see what we're seeing, you know, from time to time pop up on social or even in the news or whatever the case may be, I'm talking about egregious things that we have no excuse for. It makes me question, you know, what is the underlying and the fundamental reason why people do certain things. And so I don't necessarily apply the same filter to everybody, but it's quite evident when you meet someone that does it for that reason.
Right. So in keeping with that, I had a thought. Often what we're talking about is that men don't necessarily do things out of love. There's some men out there that do things out of service, and they define service a way that isn't inclusive of love. And that's fine. You're right. The nuance is so deep that it's almost infinite when it comes to love. That's why it's so challenging. Mm-hmm. But the question that came up in my head is then, okay, so, and it's going to be nuanced, but I'm going to open it up and see what you guys have to say. Do men need love then? Do all men need love? Or is that so subjective it can't even be answered? Or in general, do men need some form of love to be mentally well? Because we're talking about men's mental health here, right? And I think overall, generally, without the nuance that I do recognize, I think personally that you do need love in some form. I just don't know if everybody defines it the same way. And I'll pass it to you, Sean, first. Do you think all men need love?
Yes. But they don't need to hear it as love, perhaps initially, in order to make it palatable. It can just simply be called connection. And that connection will evolve into love if it's with the right person. And it can be same sex, different sex, someone across the country, someone in social media, digitally, across the world. You can create a connection with, and you can have a sense of love for that individual. And I don't see any harm in that, because that is, if you create a connection, a positive connection with someone that you feel a sense of affection for, not desire in this case perhaps, but a sense of affection for, it's teaching you things. It's teaching you things about yourself, and it's teaching you things about how to interact with others. And there's no harm in that. However, what holds men back from doing that? Well, I scribbled down a little list on my little Word document here, and here we go. So love, yeah, it's enriching and fulfilling, and, you know, we love to love on love, but for some, it can create this: dependency, jealousy, heartbreak, compromise, expectations, and conflict. And so we don't have to build out all of those different words and what it means and how it impacts men or women or everyone as a whole. But there's some roadblocks to love. It's not just you jump in your love car, throw it in fifth gear, put the gas pedal to the floor, and start firing down the highway with no obstacles in your way. It's not like you get to drive down the highway forever, the love highway. There's toll booths. There's road bumps. There's potholes. And so all of these little things that you're going to bump into on the love highway, sometimes just one issue, we'll call it heartbreak. Maybe that's enough, man. The guy wants to get off love highway and never get back on it. Exit stage right. And so that's it, that's all. But we all know that a heartbreak shouldn't be enough to throw love out the window. These things typically make us pause when they show up, reflect on how to move around the obstacle, and then re-engage in the process of connecting with people around you that may evolve again into a form of love. It's the case of never give up. Not be a one and doneer. Engage in life. Pursue. Pursue the totality of life so that you get to experience all of the things, the good and the bad and the ugly, as it were.
Seb?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think too much of a good thing can bring about things that are less desirable, but mainly those things have nothing to do with love or the thought of. It's our perception of what we are evaluating, and we make the mistakes as failing humans. I think that love is pure. We're not. And we really need as individuals to dial that in for what it means to us as individuals. But generally speaking, look at our suicide rates. I mean, I think that speaks volume to what men, you know, really need, and the fact that it is very rare that we openly value men amongst men. You know, yeah, they might do some cool and we'll call it cool, or we'll repost a social media post or whatever the case may be, but it's very rare that we fully engage in letting a man, a fellow man, know how important, how truly important they are or have been in your life, where you foresee this going. And sometimes it's just temporary state of affairs. I have no problem with that either. You know, sometimes you end up having somebody in your life that brings about a whole bunch of positive things, and one day, for what one reason or another, there is a sort of a separation or a wedge, or you know, a divergence of path or whatever the case may be. And it's interesting how some people will let those incidents create reluctance in engaging in the future, where if you understand that year, that 2 year, that 3 year that you spent learning from somebody, having somebody in your life that was engaged in a reciprocal relationship where you had there was a lot of value added to your life and to theirs, and you've developed as human beings by doing that, what have you lost? So now things have evolved, and I accept that humans change, their thought process will change, our directions will change, all of those things. But if it weren't for the experiences that you've had here, you wouldn't be who you are here. So you can't just say, well, I want to strike the slate clean and for this to never have happened, because you are who you are today on account of all of those connections that you have, you know, you've experienced. And so as humans, when we find something that's truly comfortable, we seem to cling to it like life depends on it. I absolutely must remain in this comfortable state for as long as humanly possible. And, you know, we want to live forever. We want to do this forever. If we find something we love to engage in, a hobby or otherwise, we want to do it forever. It's always forever. But nothing is forever. Very few things are forever. I don't like nothing.
Seb and I, we've both talked about this a handful of times in the past on podcasts and personally, privately. I think we agree on this, that our lives have been similar in the sense of people have moved in and out of our lives. I've got hundreds of people that I've lost touch with, not hundreds, thousands of people that I've lost touch with that have come into my life. They've been amazing people. We've loved on each other, mano a mano, and they've gone their way and I've gone mine. And for no other reason than my path took me in a direction and their path took them in a direction. And those directions weren't the same. And I don't know where those men are anymore. But one thing about me is I don't try to hunt down past experiences. I don't try to hunt down past relationships. Right or wrong, I've lived my life this way. The people who are in my life, I try to fully engage with them. And when they move out of my life, I don't try to fully engage with them. I pursue my life, and if they come back into my life, that's good. And if they don't, that's also okay. I've got enough people that in my life provide me love and I can provide to them that my life is full. And so people moving in and out of my life doesn't detract from my life. It's sometimes sad. Personally, I feel it sometimes when someone that I really care for, their path takes them in a different direction, and I realize that I'll never see them again. It's a sad moment for me. But that sadness is important, man. You should use it as context as to the importance of providing love and receiving love and understanding love. The moment that it disappears, that's the contextual part of it. But by it disappearing, it doesn't strip away love forever. It's just a moment in time that you get to understand the power of love and the importance of love and why you're pursuing love. And that doesn't mean hunt it like a desperate schoolboy. It means be open to it. Observe the patterns around you and see it for what it is, and then have faith that by engaging in it, it's going to turn into something good.
And I think that's the wisdom that's lost in heartbreak that causes people to become jaded, is they don't get to see that they got to experience love after the heartbreak happens. It's the paradox of love, right? I mean, death is not as bad as heartbreak for some people. Some people experience the loss of a loved one and they'd rather die. Death is peaceful. You're gone. Whatever is going on in the next realm, you can't know when you pass. But when you're alive and you've lost somebody that you love deeply, it feels like you don't want to be alive anymore. So I can understand. I can empathize with people who would want to give the middle finger to love after they've experienced a tremendous loss. And that could be father and son, or father and mother, or best friends. A guy that you grew up with all your life. And now you're just becoming a recluse because you lost your best friend and hurt you so bad, you don't know how to go and create another relationship because there's this roadblock. It's almost like love has PTSD built into it, because when you lose it, it's so painful at first. And you and I, all three of us in this panel, have experienced mental health trauma from experiences in our life. I'm sure you to have also experienced a lot of loss, and it's just as painful. You know, when my granddad was one of the only men in my life that took the time to be part of my life and help raise me, and I looked up to him like a father. And when he passed away, it stripped me of something for a long time that felt like I was going to be missing something in my life forever. And this was in my early 30s. I was 31, I believe, when he passed away. And it helped me learn. At that time, it really helped me to see a deeper understanding of what love is. And I was thankful enough to see that in order to mature as a human being, you almost need to have experienced some loss. Like you said, Sean, and you also said it too, Seb. You can't know what love is until you've had it. And then you can't really know how powerful love is until you've lost it. And only one person in a relationship gets to feel that first, right? And so you're damning yourself to sort of one of the most challenging and terrifying life sentences when you are vulnerable that way and you allow somebody's love to come in, or you give them your love totally, right? In 100% total absorption of another person's energy, and you connect with them, you know one day you're getting it or they are. And that's rude and it's really callous to say, but this is the danger that some people face when they're trying to have love again, is they're so worried about that pain that they forget about the other side of the experience, which is the love. And I believe you guys that it's worth experiencing over and over again, even if the trauma is so deeply terrifying that it's worse than death.
Yeah, I think for me, there's a piece that's often forgotten when people engage and connect with each other, and that's the concept of self-love. You can't just start investing everything in other people and start loving hard on absolutely everybody and not love yourself. If you have gotten to the point where your sole reason for living and doing the things that you're doing is a codependency or some form of love that is so strong that you must forget all about yourself, this is where we're kind of going wrong. There is no need for that. And not only is there no need for that, but it's not the preferable course of action when you're engaging in those types of connections. It's important that I have self-love. The person I engage with has self-love, because it's going to be very difficult to have an authentic relationship with somebody that wants the best for you and will do everything they can to support you. Whereas if they don't have self-love, now we're starting to toy and flare up insecurities and all of the things that really interfere with connectivity. And so for me, you know, when I talk to people that have been through breakups, and I've had my breakups, and they are horrible. There's no question that that's the case. But the fix to a breakup is more love, not less. You're just redirecting it where it ought to be, which is in the moment. It's for myself. I need to be doing the things that I know I don't want to do. I need to force myself out of bed and into that, you know, off of that curl in a little ball position with my, you know, my thumb in my mouth. I need to make a nutritious meal. I need to be training, even if I absolutely don't feel like it. I need to go outside. I need to connect with other people. I need to watch the movie, read the book, write the paper, whatever the case may be. All of the things that you absolutely do not want to engage in when you've been hurt. The fastest way to redemption is to actually turn that love meter on you.
And one more thing I'd love to add to that, no pun intended, is that I think a lot of men consider love as like a bucket of water. And when you're born, you're given a bucket of water and you've got to use it wisely. Kind of love on this person. Oh, I wasted all that water on that person. They're gone. Oh, now I've only got 3/4 of a bucket. Ugh. And so like not everyone. I know a number of men that ration their love like they only got a bucket of it. But the truth of the matter is this. We're all on a residential water system that has a spigot on it that you get to turn and control the volume of love on a daily basis. It's not like when you walk into your kitchen and turn on your tap, nothing comes out. You get to control the velocity of the water in your kitchen. That's kind of like love, man. It's always there. Every single day, it's your kitchen spigot. You get to control it. You get to control how much you put out into the world. And you've got to understand that it's limitless, just like a residential water system. It never runs out. What does run out is perhaps your patience. What does run out is perhaps your attitude. What does run out is perhaps your frustration, your whatever. Those are the things that interfere with the water flow. But love is bottomless, as it were, and it's free to freaking give. Like in your kitchen, you're paying for that water, maybe 1 cent per gallon or whatever the case is. But you don't pay for love, except dependency, jealousy, heartbreak, compromise, expectations, and conflict. That is where you start paying. If you're, and it can happen to the best of men out there with all of the best intentions that ran the best program, something goes sideways and now you're facing heartbreak or bitterness or whatever the case is. That takes time to work through. But while you're working through that, that doesn't mean that you put love on pause. It's not like the water tap ran out. It's always there. And that's something that every man has to understand in those tough moments. You've got limitless love that you can deploy for free at no cost to you any time of the day, wherever you want, digitally or right there in front of your house. It's always freely available.
And that Seb made the point, so I'll just say it to connect with what you said, Sean. That goes for self-love. It should be limitless, right? We had this little funny thing on our last recording where we talked about forcing a smile or giving yourself a high five or saying, I love you, looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I love you, and, you know, examining who you are and being okay with it instead of ruminating on your past and all your mistakes and all your failures and all the other things in your life. And maybe, and I'll ask it to you guys, I think this might be accurate, that the only way to be able to truly fulfill a relationship with love is if you have a good self-love, self-care package. I think that all of the flaws that come out in love are not the love itself, like Seb said. I think love is sort of, in a strange way, it's almost like a fundamental field in the universe. It's us humans that screw it up with all of the things that we have as problems. We bring baggage to love. Love is not broken. We are. And people don't realize that, right? So sometimes, men especially, we go from one relationship to the other thinking that love is messed up and love sucks. But it's because we don't have a self-care routine. And then we're bringing negative qualities or attributes or perhaps an ethical or a moral compass that's built on Western cultural standards that don't necessarily fit into the relationship you need. And so they interfere with love, and love is the pure thing and you're not. And we get it twisted backwards, right? What do you think, Seb?
Mm-hmm. It can be even simpler than that. It can be insecurities. It could be a variety of other things. It doesn't even need to be on a greater scale. But you're right. Everything will be exacerbated by all of those faults that we have, including love. Now, the problem with love is one of the most intensive human experiences. And so if you're exacerbating what it's like, you're making it that much more intense, not necessarily in a good way. And that, you know, obviously can create resentment and fear and create all kinds of issues when it comes to re-engaging in it. Now, it's no different than taking a plane and having an emergency landing. You know, are you going to stop traveling? Because I'm going to argue that you're going to miss out a lot more on the possibility of experiencing great things for the rest of your life on account of one event. Would you stop driving if you got into a car accident? Like if you know, any of those things, everything we do carries risk. Simply because we're not meant to come out of this alive. Like we're just not. And somehow we're acting like we are. We're not. You know, every day that we're here is a gift. We need to treat it as such. Every connection that we have the time to invest in, we need to appreciate it fully. All of those things. Humans, even the best intended one, will still take everything for granted if they're not consistently reminded that things can change, that things can be different, that you can lose the things that you are so adamantly in love with. And so I think it's a very fluid process, but I think it brings back the conversation to something that's extremely important. Is in order for you to give the best out of your love and in order for you to be receptive to the best that people have to offer, you need to be the best version of yourself. You can't just show up with the same old skeleton and expect a different outcome. That's the definition of insanity. You just can't. And so I tend to take the loss, take the pain and try to channel it to see what is it that I brought to this relationship, or what is it that was, you know, what are some of the issues that I experienced in my connection with this person? And for one of the persons I love the most, which was mom, was my inability to be honest and open with her, for example, right? And so for me, that was my way of re-engaging in love, of self-loving, of loving her, and just making sure that moving forward, I would be a different person in a different relationship. If you are looking externally every time you get hit by life, trying to fix what could or would or should, you're never going to control that. For one, it's going to create a ton of anxiety and resentment and fear and apprehension. But you do have a choice. And that choice is, how can this love, even if it's over or if it's gone or if I lost it or whatever the case may be, how can I reallocate it to myself and make myself into the person that I, that is appealing to love, that understands love, that is capable of engaging in it in a healthy way, all of those things. Just controlling the external world, man, you just can't do it. What do you control?
There's a word that's been slapping around in my prefrontal cortex now for the last 3 minutes. And I can't get rid of it. I tried a few different words. I tried calibrate. That didn't work. So I'm going to throw the word out here in a sec. But first, let me paint a picture. Let's pretend for a moment that we all exist in a quantum level, an energetic level. We're all in a field of energy right now as we move through our world. And of course, our visual perspective of that is that we see people, we see chairs, we see doors, we see cars, but it's all, you know, it's all energy, for lack of a better term. But without getting too woo-woo, I think if you can imagine that you are jumping in to that energetic field for the first time, you're landing in it. It's not like a trampoline. You're just, now you're immersed in it. Our job in that moment is to harmonize with the moment, to harmonize with the frequency, to harmonize with the field that is surrounding us, the electrical field, the carrier wave, if you want to use the matrix, whatever terminology works for you, but to harmonize to the moment. So you can have all the love in the world and you can be pouring it out into the world. And if you aren't harmonized to what is required, your love could be something that is irking people, irritating people, annoying you even, because you're not harmonized to the moment. You're so busy trying to be loving that you're not sensitive to the harmonization of what is not appropriate, but what is required in that moment. And not just required for you or the other person or the car driving down the street, for the world, for the state of existence that we're in. So how far can you harmonize? I suppose there's people in the world that harmonize the world. And then there's people who just harmonize their neighborhood. And how big do you want to think? How far does this all go? How deep down the rabbit hole do you want to tumble? It's a big concept. It's a big thought. But I do believe at a very simplistic level, if you can harmonize with the real-time moment now, which shifts constantly, but just do your best to dial in to the moment rather than be unaware of the moment, then love starts taking effect. The verb love is basically requires action. And so you need to drop in, harmonize, and then execute against the love problem in front of you, if that's for all the army guys out there. But really, it's just a matter of feeling what is right for you and the other person in the moment. What I want and what I get are not always the same thing. But if I had my way, if I could push the magic red button and run my life the way that I want to run it every single time in respect to love, I would want a harmonic. I would want a symphony. I would want an orchestra of interrelational moments. And so I'll take Seb as an example. When we were hanging out in Rosslyn, he came into town and we hung out for a week and recorded some audio, about 25 hours of audio. Before we kicked off on the first session, Seb said, "Just hang on a sec. I just got to play something." I was like, "What is even going on here? Are we recording or what is happening?" And he said, "I just want to play something." And he threw up a song. And I'm not going to get deep into it, but he put on a classical piece. And as I sat there thinking about it, I was like, "Oh, heck, what is even happening right now?" I was trying to harmonize with the moment, though I didn't know what the moment was. I just allowed it to happen harmonically. And so in that moment, I felt the symphony of the connection. No canceling, no square waves, no round waves, no nothing. Just a symphony of emotion, a symphony of connection in that moment. And it's hard to describe. No one can understand what I would try to relay in words. And so I'm not going to try. All I can say is this, that for me, the magic is the symphonic relationship in the wave rather than the, we'll call it the physics of it. I hope that makes sense.
I think so. symphony is a really nice way of thinking about love because it's so multifaceted. It becomes every part of your life. If you're in a really good relationship, and like I said, this is subjective, of course, but I think that if you're in a good relationship, you could describe it as that because everything you do, it is like a different piece of the music. It's a different instrument. And if all you had was just a solo guitar, there's nothing wrong with solos. There's nothing wrong with acoustic music, but some of the most rich things have a multifaceted characteristic to them, right? Where there's a deepening of it because there's a spectrum of sound. We're using this as the analogy. The only way to do that with love, I think, is to continue experiencing it over and over again and not be jaded by it, whether that's in your relationships with your guys at work or whether it's with your children or with your spouse. As you grow and you age, there is supposed to be wisdom found in love. And we too often, I think we miss the message, like Seb said, because we're drowned by cultural norms and stereotype and bias and our own skeletons in our closet. So we miss it. And I believe that men need love in their life. I think that we're missing the connection that we should have with our brothers. I think the connections have been distorted by culture, by modern day living, by our diets, by the way that we perceive ourselves, by the way that media perceives men, by the way that media portrays men in society and men's roles now. It's challenging and it's so complex for men to find their place in life and to be mentally well. Men need to, I'm saying this as an opinion, not as an objective truth. You look out on the world, all three of us, when you look out on the world, you can see so many broken men and yet they're fully capable. And what they're missing is that sense of purpose. And for men, I think that's one of the most important love languages. Seb talked about earlier about why all these men are taking their lives. It's because they lose their purpose, you know? They feel like they've been forgotten after they've offered something sacred, like their life for somebody else in the service, in the military or in law enforcement or other emergency services, or they've encountered a relationship that broke them. And so they end up jaded and it breaks them in the future for the rest of their relationships. And then you see men who fall through the cracks. And it's because the love language for men is having a purpose and being needed. And that falls away. And I think it's up to society and all other men in society to make sure that we're challenging our brothers around us to see that they have purpose. And you guys always talk about it. I learned this so much from listening to the collective and to big, smart, wise men like you, that is connected to the why. And we talk about this all the time, and it's so simple a word. But why is connected to purpose, and purpose is connected to the definition of love by men. And then when you strip that away from men, they're emasculated and they fall and they become mentally unwell, and then they lose their drive to be a good member of society, and then we lose them. So how do we put our heads together here just to finish this off in helping men see that there is purpose for them after something, after the military, after their career, after a breakup, or during their life when they're struggling? What as men that are confident, that have gone through this and learnt, what do we do to show other men that there is purpose, that there is a why, that there is a place for all of us? Sean, go ahead first.
Well, I'm going to try to answer your question with a follow-on to the symphonic aspect of love. Perhaps when you envision a symphony, an orchestra, there's typically a conductor at the front. And you might be the conductor of your life. You might be running your own symphony right now. And if you're not doing a good job, the beauty of it is there are guest conductors that can step in to run the symphony, like my wife. We can have conductors all around us that can step up and run the symphony for us for a little bit. It's just finding the right guest conductor. And if you don't have a wife, if you don't have a spouse, if you don't have a whatever, if you don't have any friends, if you're all by yourself, you've given up on love, you can find it in lots of weird spots, man, if you're open to it, if you're looking for the pattern. You can walk into a coffee shop and a barista can show you a little bit of love. And you can choose to ignore it, or you can choose to accept it. That's completely up to you. But if you deny it, that's on you. If you accept it, now that's you building you up again, back towards being a conductor of the symphony. And again, you can always have a guest conductor step in and demonstrate to you how the symphony can be run. And so, again, a good spouse for anybody out there who's in the hurt locker, maybe your spouse needs to be the conductor for a while and teach you how to run the symphony. But you have to watch, you have to listen, you have to enjoy, you have to dial in and experience the carrier wave of the love from the other person in order for you to get back on the orchestral podium and start conducting again.
Seb?
One of the most powerful of all vibration is authenticity. It's what you emanate when you are authentic, whatever that looks like for you. And, you know, in speaking to vibrations and what happens when two people connect, is sometimes you completely sync. Like sometimes it just goes right in sync, as Sean is alluding to here. And those are some very powerful connections. But when I look at life, I look at ebbs and flows. If you're not expecting ebbs and flows, if you're not expecting that things will get hard, if you're not expecting that your love investment will not pay dividend, and this is an important nuance to make, is people want to engage in things on account of the reciprocity of the same things. Mm-hmm. Mother Teresa didn't go out expecting or hoping that people would give her back as much as she's given. Even though she's given, and I use her as an example, it can be anybody that's done things for righteous things for the collective. I think the day that you stop looking at what came back from what you invested is the day that you are taking a lot more out of your connections than trying to quantify that. And that's why, you know, for me, if I'm very close with someone and we're going for dinner and I bill or whatever, like there is no amount of one-sided grabbing the bill that's ever going to jeopardize that relationship. I couldn't care less, right? Because it's irrelevant. It's immaterial in that relationship. We're not nickel and diming. And yes, it can be argued that if it's always the same person, all those things, boundaries are boundaries, and you should have them everywhere. You should have them in love. You should have them in relationships and those types of things. And it's healthy for us to have that. And that brings about the concept of self-love. If you have no boundaries, then you need to work on that, on self-love, to establish healthy boundaries for you. You know, if for some people, it's one problem. For the next person, it's the complete opposite problem. But I think, ultimately, if we focus on making ourselves as individuals better, in any way that we can, and we keep in mind that life is going to hit us every step of the way. The obstacles are not in the path, they are the path, is a quote that I really, really like, because it is absolutely true. And once this becomes your accepted reality, then when something happens, you're not shocked, you're not rocked, you're not all of those things, because you expect that. It's a normal course of action. It doesn't change how you process information. It doesn't change. It doesn't bring about a DEFCON 5, you know, self-protection mechanism that all of a sudden unlocks and starts locking a cage around you to make sure that you never get hurt again, because you know it has the potential to happen again, and that's okay. That's the human condition. I'm not going to let it change me. I'm not going to change the world, but I'm not going to let the world change me, because there is going to be so much fulfillment in doing and being authentic, being true, and doing the things that you want to do and engage in life in the way that you should, that doing it any other way is going to inherently take away from all of the good that life has to offer, right? So again, you can look at all of these things. You can call it love, you can call it whatever you want, but ultimately it comes down to one thing. How do you process life as a whole? How do you view it? How do you view adversity? What are you searching for? Are you searching for happiness at all times, or are you searching for meanings? Because you can find meaning everywhere, but happiness isn't always going to be there. It's just, that's just a fact. If you lose a kid, or you know, good luck with that. And so, but you can find meaning in that. And so I think that we need to worry. There's even in most conversations that you will have with men, there is so much worrying about what other people think and perceive, and how does this come about, and how does this come across, and what is the implications here, and all kinds of over-processing of information. Is, are you being you? Yes. Sometimes it hurts, sometimes it doesn't. Most of the time it's awesome, right? If you are where you need to be as a human being. And so for me, instead of trying to control, and that's the empowering piece, I can't control any of the external factors, but I always control myself. So how much work do I need to do so that I'm not afraid to be the person that I need to be? That I'm not afraid to tell a good friend how valued they are before, you know, perhaps alleviating some of the mental health issues that they have. Who knows, right? It's not that it's self-serving, and it shouldn't be. It should be selfless. That's not to say that there shouldn't be boundaries.
Sean said something to me a long time ago, and it was the first time I'd heard it. He said, how you do one thing is how you do everything. Maybe if we get love right, almost all other aspects of our life probably fall into place well, because it starts at the top. And Dr. Jordan Peterson says that love might be the ultimate virtue in human reality. It might be the ultimate goal to achieve. And maybe when you're talking in religious circles, that in itself, the love of God, if you believe in God, is sort of the ultimate thing, but trying to achieve that form of love is sort of the ultimate goal of humans. Because if you act in a loving way, everything seems to trickle down properly in your life. And then going back into really ancient times, and I've spoken about this before, Plato spoke about agape love, which was an all-encompassing universal love that humans should have for one another. It is beyond intimacy and the relationship status you have with anybody. It is an overarching meta love for humans as humans. And it's probably drawn on some kind of connection, like you said, Sean. There is an energetic bond between everybody if the frequency and the vibe matches. And there's some gut instinct built into that. You don't have to love everybody, really. You don't. But you got to have a tribe of somebody to love, I think. And these are just my two cents at the end of this podcast. But connection, Sean, you hit it perfectly, is one of the most important things. You got to learn to see and feel that vibe and that connection from your previous relationships. And then Seb, you said that self-love is important. And I think it's the two. You have to mix them, right? You've got to be brave to have love, because it's the most dangerous thing that I think people can do. And you've got to have self-love in order to bring proper love into the relationship. And then you got to be able to feel that vibe and walk away from the things that don't vibe with you properly. And I think in order for men to be mentally well, that's might be something that is good for all of us to try and better in our lives, try to master just a little bit more. Not like cooking in Vietnam where you slack off, John. And with that, thank you so much, Seb, for joining us upon the horizon. Cheers.
Peace.
All right, boys.